Welcome back, folks, to another edition of the Wolverine.com live podcast with Doug Skeen. This is our TV version. We apologize for that in advance. You get to see us, have to see us. So it is what it is. So they don't call them big uglies for nothing. But anyway, Doug Skeen, five-time Big Ten champion, All Big Ten offensive lineman. Skeen waited his turn, became one of the better linemen Michigan's ever had. And I'll say this, Skeen, your offensive lines, and I've said this many times about the early 1990s lines, some of the best lines overall, but some of the best run blocking lines for sure. I put this line up with that one, even though they've had several different combinations. There were some chinks in the armor though on Saturday, weren't there, against Illinois? A 19-17 Michigan win that was tougher than expected, and for a couple reasons. Number one, Illinois came in prepared. Brett Bielema had his team prepared. We'll talk about his crying about the officiating here in a minute. But number two, Michigan had several starters out, and once again, including your left guard, Trevor Keegan, Giovanni Elhadi went in there. It was a bitter day, brother. But those guys, there were some chinks in the armor, like I said, weren't there?
It was a bit clunky at times there, Ballas, and absolutely watching the offensive line perform against a pretty doggone good defensive front, and specifically defensive line. Illinois had some dudes up in there that were some big dudes that could move really well. But their defensive scheme really, I think, took advantage of Michigan's counter offense. If you go back and watch it, at the first sign of a pulling lineman, man, Illinois was filling gaps and filling them hard, which causes problems, and it requires a higher level of discipline and performance out of your offensive line and tight ends to make the absolute perfect gap step blocks and getting some push in that down lineman guy. But they were crashing the edges. It's the same. It's just sort of the recipe for defeating Michigan's base run offense is to crash the edges, get guys up in some gaps, get some shoulders, Michigan shoulders turned to the sideline, get some leakers in the backfield. So that wet times was absolutely a problem. And when that happens, then you got to go to the air and get some people to back off. And that was a struggle at times as well. So credit to Illinois. I thought they had a good game plan. Their players are ready to go, and that didn't surprise me at all. What did surprise me was Michigan's lack of execution offensively to be able to score more points.
Yeah, the first drive, though, they marched down the field again. I think that is, what, 9 times in 10 starts for J.J. McCarthy that they went down and scored. And John Borton, who is obviously one of our editors and senior editors at the Wolverine.com, we were in the box and we were about halfway through this game, and he said, you know, they script that first series. Maybe they should script the first 50 plays. and then they'll get the offense going, because it struggled after that. What did they do well on the first game? Boy, there's Brad Forney with a $50 question. Bring it to you in 1 second. Good Lord, Brad. That's outstanding. But in fact, let's do it now. For God's sakes, Brad, no questions. Just want to say thank you for doing these chats on Sundays. These have been an absolute blast. Have a great Thanksgiving, a wonderful holiday season. Let's kick the crap out of Ohio State. I could not agree more. Brad Forney is one of the preferred customers at the Fort. The Wolverine.com. His brother was injured in combat, and we have had several discussions about him. Thank him for his service. But Brad, thank you for being a loyal subscriber.
Thank you, Brad. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family too.
No doubt. I'm going to buy Skeen a Fresco with that money. So, what went right on that first drive? I guess it looked like, and I think that Brett Bielema said that their guys were maybe over pursuing, or they were getting a little bit out of position. They were a little bit too aggressive early, and it really kind of played right into Blake Corum's hands with some of the cutbacks.
There was a couple plays. If you go back, Illinois had guys in our backfield, and Corum made a nice cut, got to the second level in that one big run, and then off he went. And so that just a few times that happened, and then Illinois calmed down and didn't get so deep into the backfield. A lot of times defensive linemen are taught you never want to be more than 2 yards deep past the line of scrimmage. And at times they're blitzing linebackers and defensive linemen were 3 or 4 yards deep. Well, you're in no man's land back there at that point, unless you have the ball carrier in your hands. So a little over pursued, a little too much aggressiveness out of there, but they did a nice job of adjusting. So the first series, yeah, went really well. Michigan was on their blocks. Illinois maybe not in the right position, and all of a sudden we go down the field and score, and it looks like, hey, this might be an easy day. And then all of a sudden it wasn't.
No, it certainly wasn't. And let's talk about the one run. How did Michigan counter, I guess, the aggressiveness? Because there was a run where Corum bounces to the outside. He's fouling a tight end, and it looked like a little bit of misdirection where, okay, we're going to use their aggressiveness against them. Were there a couple different things that you saw, or was this just something that you do to counter when they're being that aggressive?
One of the things, if you've got defensive linemen and linebackers jumping gaps, specifically defensive linemen, guys jumping and hard slants and whatnot, you like to do, you know, that counteraction where you're pulling and you're kicking guys out. That takes the steam right out of it. You do that a couple of times, you can burn people on that. Think of the old trap play, right? And there's inside trap. You can trap a three technique. You can trap anybody in the defensive line. But what I mean by trap is, again, you block down somebody. Somebody basically goes unblocked in the defense, and then you got a pulling lineman coming across to knock them out. The ball carrier goes right off the inside butt cheeks of that pulling lineman. And Michigan's made a living off of that part of that fundamental all year long, where you see a lot of guys pulling and they'll kick a defensive lineman toward the sideline and someone else bends up in the front side hole to get the front side linebacker. And yesterday, the problem was that bending up, that linebacker wasn't waiting. That linebacker was either coming on a run blitz and there was no time to get the proper angle on him. He was already home before you needed to be there. So Illinois was very aggressive against the run, and that caused problems for what we like to do. But again, it's a risky defense if you're a defensive coordinator, because you can give up some big ones if you're that aggressive and you get your kick block, you get that trap block on time and the thing's timed up well. And it could be a guard. It could, with Michigan, it could be the guard center often pulls those guys, you know, in the guard and tackle, but the tight ends are often crossing formations, trying to get to an inside number, kicking a guy out to the sideline to allow the inside seam. So it only takes a couple of those. And we saw a couple of those early. Corum had a couple of nice runs, but then Illinois wasn't getting so deep. They were shallowing out their angles and being more pointed toward the attack of where that ball carrier was. And again, I thought it was well executed on Illinois' part. And when that thing starts to happen and they're playing such heavy run, that's when you go, okay, we're going to play action you and we're going to throw the ball over your head. But then there you had missed throws, you had drops, and it wasn't an efficient passing offense. And now you got problems.
You do. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but we're going to get to Shane Johnson's question here. 499. Shane, thanks again, man. CB, what's the secret injuries to Scooney and Edwards? Scooney's a shoulder. I don't think that's really a big secret. Edwards is an upper body injury that I think he will play through. We'll see how limited he is, because when you have those, I mean, you're talking about ball security and stuff like that, right? There's a pain threshold, right, Skeen? That, hey, if you can't injure it, especially this time of year, but if you can't injure it more, then you play through it, especially in a game like this. But when you're talking about ball security and stuff like that, then it becomes a problem. So
shoulders, elbows, wrists, you name it, mm-hmm. whether you're a tight end like Schoonmaker and you can't get the shoulders up and you got, you know, working the arms and trying to block people, that's a problem. I don't know what his range of motion is. I have no idea. But if, you know, of course, if you're a ball carrier, the same thing. The ball security requires that shoulder to be tight. You're pulling your arm against your body and everything else. So, playing through pain is certainly something that all those guys are doing right now. But if the pain is it's not a pain thing. If it's just an ability thing, if you have a problem with a muscle or soft tissue that you can't secure or you can't block, you can't get your arm where it needs to go, then you can't play.
Yeah, we're confident that Edwards will dress this coming week. So, and I will say this, there's nobody this time of year, as Skeen always says, right? That is 100%. Okay. But when you look at the guys that were missing in the Illinois game, you had AJ Henning who was out. Ronnie Bell did a great job returning punts. You had two offensive linemen that are out. And as you said, when we were talking off the air, Carson Barnhart is essentially a starter at right tackle. And then I'm going to go back real quick, if you don't mind, Hutch, to finish his question first, though, when he's talking about Blake Corum. Any regrets about running Blake Corum into the ground the last few weeks? None. And when I asked Blake Corum specifically, I said, you know what? A lot of people are asking, are you getting too many carries? He said, man, let's play another one. You know, and he said, I can go all day. The one thing that I would notice or say about him was he seemed to be avoiding contact a little bit more on Saturday. There was a play on the screen pass where he ran out of bounds. I'm thinking he's going to stiff arm this jump and he's going to go, right? Yeah, not jump, because that that's a good defensive team. I didn't mean it disrespectfully, but, and there were times that he ran out of bounds where he'd normally put his shoulder down. Two things. It was so bitter cold that day that hitting that ground was probably hitting like hitting cement. But number two, it's almost, and I'm not, there's no blame here or anything like that, but it's almost when you're trying to avoid injury skiing, you know, that you're playing to avoid it, that these things happen. So, but I don't have any, I don't have any regrets about them running as much as they did.
Yeah, the only thing that was visible is that I do think Corum was avoiding some contact, right? And you know, again, you see that in professional athletes all the time, where you see a ball carrier, like a quarterback will do that oftentimes. You're down the sideline, you know, okay, if I stay in bounds and I take this big shot, I might get an extra yard or two and I might get hurt, or I can just step out of bounds, go back to the huddle and do it all over again. Yeah. Sometimes those coaches are actively telling guys, hey, don't be a hero here. We need you on the field. We need you healthy. I have no idea what Coach Hart is telling Corum and the rest of those running backs in that room in that situation. But there was just a couple snaps out there. But the cold weather, Ballas, I don't think that had anything to do with it. You're out there playing in it. You're falling down. You're just, you know, you're down in it, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah, boy, it was bitter, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I remember that Illinois game reminded me a little bit of my last game in Michigan Stadium, which was a snowy, cold day. We fumbled the ball. We put the ball on the ground 9 times that day.
I remember.
I think we lost 4 or 5 of them. We ended up tying the game. And there were, we still rushed for over 400 yards, but gave away the ball 4 or 5 times. And, you know, we got out of there with an ugly tie. It's like, you know, I was thinking back to that. I'm thinking, you know, here we are again, the week before
Illinois.
Ho-hum, it's Illinois. And this is what college-age guys do, as I've said many times before on these broadcasts. And it looked like Michigan maybe had a little bit of part of that. But when it came time to start making plays, they weren't there. Right? Michigan struggled in some. Now, of course, they made plays late to go win the football game. That was important. But a lot of clunkiness execution-wise for that Michigan offense that absolutely has to get cleaned up.
And means absolutely nothing going into next week. And we'll talk about that in a second. As for Junior Colson, Shane, I don't know, but I can tell you that the vast majority of guys that were banged up or sat this week out will play next week. As Jim Harbaugh said, if you're capable, you do play in this game. If you're nicked up, as long as you're not going to get banged up. There are going to be some big ones, though, that they're probably going to have to play without. So it's going to be tough. There's no question about it. Let's get to the 1999 question here. Jeremy, thank you so much, man. 1999, Jim's mantra has always been to do what works till they stop it. Many thought they should have been working on what needs to be improved passing game. So if they can stop the run, you have an alternative. What say you? And I think part of that is fair. But I think, Jeremy, at times this year, they tried to do that. They went like in certain drives where, and they're working at it all the time in practice. Don't get me wrong. And if we had a nickel for every time Jim Harbaugh said, you know, this is hitting in practice, it's not the same as doing it in a game. But there were a couple drives the week before where they said, screw it, we're going to go back and pass on every down in this drive. And they just weren't connecting. Guys weren't getting open. Guys weren't catching the ball. So the first goal is to win the football game, first and foremost. So, and you're 11-0, right? So it was really hard to argue that, hey, they're doing something wrong. Now, if next week they go into next week and they get blown out by Ohio State, and you can then that's certainly a valid argument, my point, and to your point, to say, hey, they should have been doing more in the passing game. But at some point, it's about personnel too. Guys have got to make plays. J.J. McCarthy had his worst game. Granted, the wind was howling. It was terrible out there. But Tommy DeVito was making plays into that wind, and guys were catching the ball, and Andrell Anthony was not. Neither J.J. McCarthy wasn't making throws. He had a couple times to his tight end scheme that were wide open that he's got to make those plays against Ohio State. So, Jeremy, let's talk about this again next week, but I think it's fair, and I think it's also fair to question scheme and, okay, what are we doing here? Do we need to bring in another passing game coordinator to figure some things out? We're going to talk about the pick play here in a second, scheme that actually won him the game. But to me, Jeremy, when you're 11-0, it's hard to question and say, hey, you're doing this wrong.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, I think going into the game, it was like, just get the W. Get the W. And Michigan did that. And no one's going to remember this going into Saturday's game at Ohio State. It doesn't matter at this point. So Michigan's right where you want to be. They found a way to win, a way to win in a clunky, ugly performing game. And that's all that matters. As far as do what works until they stop it, I think that's absolutely been Jim's mantra all year long. And but Illinois stopped it. And then just like you said, Ballas, the sky balls, the missed open receivers, Andrell Anthony on the play where they thought the defender was offside. So you throw it deep, you know, the snap where Olu snapped it quick.
Yes.
And he pointed right over at him, expecting the flag, where
should have been a flag
in the replay. It was awfully close on the television copy replay there. And he was offside. So they throw the thing deep and lo and behold, it goes right through Anthony's hands. Very, very catchable ball. So, you know, and the other drops earlier, and of course there was a big catch late in the game for the first down, but you know, the other stuff, you know, hey, listen, here's a shocker, Ballas. It's going to be cold in late November. You're going to have to catch the ball in the cold air. I'm assuming Michigan's practicing outside to because that's where you're going to play in it. I would hope they're practicing outside. So it's just part of the deal in the Big Ten. And so it's going to be cold and it's going to be windy and you still have to execute. But this passing game has been, you know, something we've been talking about now for the last month. Where's the stars in this passing game other than our tight end and crossing routes? Who's the guy that can connect on their long route? JJ's been overthrowing. In this game, he didn't overthrow. It hit the guy in the hands and he just dropped it. So the performance level of all the participants in the passing game need to get better. And I would say that offensive line as well. As I was watching the game, I think I counted three hits on the quarterback in the first quarter after he delivered the ball out of his hand. The ball leaves his hand and boom, he's getting hit by somebody. I'm just telling you that takes a quarterback off his game for the rest of the day. You can't allow it. But it happened on Saturday. So these things all combine.
And it did take him out of his game. He did not look that comfortable. And Derek, we're going to get to you in a second, man. But Jeremy, I wanted to say one more thing to Jeremy. This season kind of reminds me of 2006 when they ran Mike Hart just constantly into the ground. Boom, 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 boom. Then you get down to Columbus. And that first drive, they open it up and bam, they caught them off guard. Mario Manningham, wide open, boom, big play right down the field. That passing game, they scored 39 points, still lost because the defensive game plan stunk, frankly, and they just got beat 42-39. But reminds me of that season where, okay, you're going to hold some things back. The problem being, Jeremy, is that they don't have a Mario Manningham on this team. They don't have those receivers, and Adrian Arrington, guys like that can beat you that way. So they're going to have to scheme things up, but the confidence level that I have in Jim Harbaugh to do that, we saw it in 2016, frankly, 2017, they had an outstanding game plan with John O'Korn at quarterback. They just didn't have somebody to execute it and they missed some throws. And even in 2006, the one play that stands out is Chad Henne overthrowing Mario Manningham alone would have put him up by 14 points early. So you know what, as Bo Schembechler used to say, when you pass, you know, three things can happen. Two of them are bad. So, Derek, man, thank you so much. Yost Ghost, I had a beer with you, and what an unbelievable guy. You have confidence heading into Columbus. You know what? If this team was healthy, Derek, I would agree with you 100%. If they were 100% we knew that all their star players were really, really good to go, I'd be right up there and I'd say, hey, especially looking at Ohio State, kind of a paper tiger. If you look at their numbers in that first half scheme, they couldn't run the ball on Maryland, and they've had some issues with that. But their third string running back, it always seems to be the case, man. This is where it hits you. Depth is a big deal between the haves and the have nots. Michigan's third string running back, CJ Stokes, will be good in time. Ohio State's third string running back is a guy out there looking better than the two guys in front of them. So also you're skiing, just showing your age. You were one of Derek's dad's favorites. At least he didn't say grandpa.
That's cool. Well, Derek, tell your dad.
Is that your dad?
Derek, tell your dad I said go blue. And yes. Thank you for that. That's cool. The thing that is the most concerning, first of all, Ohio State struggles with Maryland. Michigan struggles with Illinois. I'm just telling you, it doesn't matter, right? I think that the effort and the execution that you saw out of both of these teams yesterday will not be the same.
Exactly.
Come Saturday. But the biggest concern is what you just said, Ballas, is that the injuries are racking up, and they're going to be a problem at some point here. You and I were texting during the game and throughout the afternoon. And I like El Hadi at left guard. He's a good young lineman. certainly tries his butt off, but there's a drop off there right now, just from a just from an experience and execution in the little things. And what I mean by that is the angles, the way he keeps a square, El Hadi, like a lot of young linemen can get turned sideways. It just think about this. When you're gap blocking someone, if you're
coming, game gap blocking.
Yeah. So if let's say, you know, I got two fists here. Imagine the front of my fists are shoulders, right? So if I'm the uncovered guy over here and I'm going to come down and gap block, I have to keep my shoulders somewhat square. I can turn them a little bit. And there was a couple plays where El Hadi comes down and he's turned sideways like this. And that allows a leaker to go in between the two. So perfect execution and gap blocking, that front side down blocking, is hips and shoulders together, down lineman, and then whichever which way that defensive lineman wants to go, the uncovered guy is going to work up to the second level linebacker. If he comes underneath, the guy on the right takes him. If he goes over the top, the guy on the left takes him. Well, if your shoulders are turned to the sideline, you've immediately eliminated yourself from any contention of effectively blocking that second level guy and probably the first level guy. And that's some of the stuff that El Hadi's going to have to clean up, and he will clean up in time. Keegan's just better at that. Yep. And that's where the problems come in. And so the little things like that were hurting us against this Illinois team that was jumping gaps. And so, like I said earlier, you got to be clean. You got to be disciplined. Your footwork has to be damn near perfect to do that against teams that are going to challenge and run block your gaps.
Which brings us to Derek. Do you think our offensive line dominates again like they did last year? And I will say this, if Keegan's out there and you've got your interior line intact, I think Keegan will go, Derek. I really do. I think it's an ankle. We saw him limping up the tunnel, but you tape it up right and you play in a game like this. And if that's the case, two things on this for Derek's question, scheme. Number one, what are the chances that Ohio State comes out with that scheme that Illinois did, because that's the best defense that Michigan played this year? Number two, is it that easy for the defense to do that? If you're not that at this point of the year, can you teach it in a week?
Well, I don't know that you have to teach anything in a week, your Ballas. I don't think so. And to answer the question, can our offensive line dominate again? I watched a lot of the Ohio State Maryland game, and I've seen Ohio State play throughout the year, and I've got some friends that are close Ohio State fans and watch them very closely, and they're not overly enthralled with their defensive line. I didn't see any studs in that defensive line. This is going to cause us problems, but the scheme probably can if we allow it to. I think you're going to see elements of what Illinois do to us. Absolutely. When motion goes away, that corner is going to come off that backside. He's going to fly like Illinois was taken advantage of, and he's going to be in our backfield untouched. That's a problem. In other cases, like going back to the Nebraska game, we weren't effectively getting to the backside linebacker because of what was going on front side. I think if Ohio State sits back and just tries to play more of a vanilla defense, and we have our starters ready to go, I think we have a real good chance of rushing the football effectively, assuming Corum is really, really healthy and maybe Edwards can get in there. So I like our chances of running that football, but it's going to require better execution of the little things that I talked about with shoulders and hips and feet and keeping an eye on things as the play develops. If it's a little clunky and out of sorts and we're in bad body position, then Ohio State won't have to do the crazy stuff by changing their fundamental defense. It'll just be a problem.
And I'll say it's a big assumption too, Derek, that all these guys are going to be healthy. And it takes a great running back too. It takes years sometimes, as we saw with Hassan Haskins, for guys to get comfortable behind a line, to know what to do, what your linemen are going to do. So, for example, if it's CJ Stokes, even if it's Donovan Edwards back there, who's getting better and better, we're seeing kind of the progression that we saw with Blake Corum behind the line out of Donovan Edwards. But you know what? If you're down to your third string guy or something like that, then you know what? It gets dicey. So that's the big question. Is it's not just the line. It's about the backs. It's about the tight ends. Is Scooney going to be in there? Is he going to be 100%? Eric All's not in there. Again, look at what they accomplished this year and last week, even pulling out a win without, what, 7 or 8 starters and their two linemen. Your first two tight ends, go right down the list, you know, two of your top two running backs. So that's 6 on offense right there. So that's, to me, the big question. But it starts with getting push up front, and then it starts with a game plan. They're going to have to score early on that scripted drive, or, you know what, in that first quarter to keep up with these guys, because I think they're going to put some points on the board. So, Derek, thanks again, man. I owe you a couple more beers. You are appreciated. So let's talk about Ohio State week and what's different about this week's scheme. And I remember both Schembechler's last press conference like it was yesterday. It was 2006. I remember talking to you right after his death. We were driving down to cover the game on a Friday night and listening to WJR. It was literally the whole day. There was just a pall over it. And I was calling people like you for our stories. Unfortunately, that's part of the job. You know, you're basically writing obituary stuff. And he said, when asked, you know, do you prepare for Ohio State and practices, even when it's not Ohio State week, he said, every day, I'll never forget it. That was the, you know, I'm 10 feet away from the guy 5 days before he passed away. So how much of that was there? And then when you get to that week, does it just ramp up to the point that, hey, this just has a completely different feel to it?
Well, it shouldn't be completely different and unfamiliar, because as Bo said, and many of the players that have ever gone through that program, coaches at Michigan and certainly at Ohio State, you talk about this year round. You talk about it often. You talk about it while you're in the building. You talk about it when you're watching film. You talk about it when you're watching the highlights at night with your buddies, you know, watching the day's highlights. And the messaging is throughout the building. There's notes about beating Ohio State, and you sort of have this conversation. And then when it's game week, it's finally, okay, now we can officially, openly talk about it, because it's here, it's now. And so the preparation started last winter, and just like it did for Ohio State. And that's why these two teams get on this collision course every year. And then who can execute and perform amongst all the emotions is the one that wins. And so it is different in a regard, but, you know, you get all the emotions, you know, that first day of Ohio State week, you get the game plan and everybody's ramped up, ready to go. And there's a lot of juice flowing around. But regardless of what emotions spike, you still have to go back to what you've been practicing all year. The left tackle has to put his first foot in the right spot on time, and his eyeballs have to go. The reads have to be correct. The quarterback, the fundamentals don't change. They just have to be done better. And Bo used to say, and Coach Moeller and Coach Carr and all the great coaches used to say, for us to go win a game against Ohio State, our left guard needs to be better than their left guard. And our right tackle needs to be better than their right tackle. And our defensive safety needs to be better than their safety. And if we can all be just a little bit better than their guy playing the same position, then we're going to win. We're going to be just fine. And that's the way we looked at it. So amongst all the hoopla and the intensity of that week, it was an intense focus on my own performance of what do I need to do to help this team get ready to go down there and win on Saturday. That's what it has to be. Because if you get involved in all the other stuff, you get distracted. And you're not thinking about your feet. You're not thinking about your keys and where you need to have your eyeballs and all those other things. And then you got problems.
Yeah. And if you've got guys banged up, then boy, it's gotta be tough to really get some continuity in there too, right? That week, if you're practicing second team guys in there and guys are resting and you banged up, did you have a week where, gosh, you guys were depleted going into that game?
I mean, yeah, but Dallas, So, you know, the way that the practices run, and I'm assuming it's the same nowadays, is football's football. You've got two offenses going. You got a first team huddle and a second team huddle, and you can switch guys in there all the time. The play calls are the same. You're running, you're practicing against the same scout team defense. You're looking at the same stuff. The preparation is too deep everywhere. So, you know, as a guy who's maybe over on the second string gets pulled over to the first string, you know, think about a guy like El Hadi, you know, his, oh my God, I'm in the first team huddle. That went away weeks ago. This guy's got all kinds of time on the field. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a bigger deal. Let's say if Olu went down at center and you saw Crippen come in at center.
Right.
I don't know what the combination is. I think Zinter probably moves over there, but someone new comes in the game that maybe hasn't been in there, that maybe didn't get as many reps with the first team. There's a little bit of like, holy cow, here we go. You know, our last trip down to Columbus, Elvis Grubbeck gets hurt in the first quarter. Todd Collins comes in the game and he had big old saucer eyes in that huddle. Right. And we're like, hey, we got this. It's all good. You know, here we go. And so the other 10 guys in that huddle will be just fine. We'll bring you along and let's just go have some fun and block people. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. And at that point you were thankful that you had a guy like Todd Collins, and he wasn't Elvis Grubbeck, but he did okay. Not great. But, and speaking of thankful, Skeen, this holiday season, it's Thanksgiving week. I'm thankful for our friends at Manscaped. Do I tell my extended family that I have the Performance Package 4.0 from the global leaders in below the waist grooming? Not to mention it includes their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to tame my bush and score brownie points with the in-laws. although they won't be getting any peaks or anything. I can promise you that. So not quite sure what that means. I'm not quite sure what that means. I'm just reading that part. So, but gift yourself Manscaped for the man in your life who needs it. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with 20% off and free shipping with the code 20GOBLUE at manscaped.com. That's 20GOBLUE. Inside, you'll find their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. Unfortunately, I have to use that each more, but it's fantastic. Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. Think of it as a cornucopia for your balls this Thanksgiving, so or Christmas, folks. It's a great gift for your dads, your grandpas. I know Skeen's gotten a couple of those kits. They've got shampoos, they've got deodorants, regular deodorants and stuff too. They're fantastic.
Lip balm guys, too, Ballas. You got to throw one of those
lip
in the
balm
car.
Too. Exactly.
Car, you know, when you're going down, and you got the chapped lips this time of
exactly.
year.
Exactly.
Winter. Yeah.
Yeah. Or when you're on the golf course like Skeen and you're pissed off because you know you jumped one. So, which doesn't happen very often with this guy, unfortunately. This guy's cool as a cucumber. So the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. Again, 20GOBLUE at manscaped.com. Thanks, guys, for supporting all of our sponsors. These guys are fantastic. So we're going to get back to Jeremy here and a 999 question. You guys are unbelievable with the cash today, guys. We appreciate it. Clayton Safey. One of our staffers stated that JJ has the highest quarterback rating and over 80% completion percentage in play action, but they do it with 50% of less of the time than with Cade last year. Is that holding it in or too many cooks in the kitchen? I think that's a great question. Two things that stand out to me about this, Jeremy. Number one, the play action doesn't work nearly as well as it should, given how much Michigan runs the football. And I'll go back again, and I don't care if everybody, says I'm talking about the 90s or whatever too much. Watching the 1990s teams do it, there was always somebody open because you had somebody running downhill or biting. I don't know if there are certain tells or something on this team, Skeen, but when they run that little play out to the right now, when it's not a waggle per se, but they're doing some play action and rolling JJ McCarthy out right, there are defenders around your deep receiver a good portion of the time. Hasn't been on a couple of the first plays of the game, your middle receiver and your short receiver. And there are times that he doesn't have anywhere to go with the ball. So I don't know why play action hasn't worked better. But number two, are there too many cooks in the kitchen? I can't answer that question. I do know that Matt Weiss is essentially responsible for red zone. I think Sharon Moore has a heavy hand in what goes on between the 20s. And I think that Jim Harbaugh's fingerprints are all over this offense too. But I can't explain it. Can you? Because to me, play action should be working better.
Well, it absolutely should be, considering the effectiveness, like you said, of the running game. And that's perfectly normal for any team that runs the football like mm-hmm. the way Michigan has, going back to our teams and all the ones in between. The only thing I could say, Ballas, is that whether you're play action or not, if you got a strong safety that's coming up and run support, your free safety is back there doing what he's got to do on your deep route. Maybe you've got somebody else playing man. But I think, again, when your receiving core is struggling to get space and get open, that allows a defense to just man you up. We're just going to play man, and I'm going to stick right in your back pocket. And time and time again, just like yesterday, the ball is coming. And there's no separation. You got a guy who's on top of your shoulder, and here comes the over the top. He slaps the ball down, and there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So, play action is nice because you can suck somebody up in theory to get somebody to pop something over somebody's head. But we haven't had a whole lot of consistency connecting on those this year either. There were some holes Saturday, and there were some holes throughout the course of the year, but. You know, it's not like it needed to be, I think, throughout the course of the season. And so, but it's not going to change. You know, Michigan right. is who they are at this point. We're going to continue to play action people and hope that we can take advantage and just execute better. Just like a lineman's got to put his feet in the right place, wide receiver or a slot or tight end, you got to run the best routes possible to lean on somebody and then break left, lean on somebody right and break right, or lean left and break right, like they do all those little drills to get separation. They just got to do a better job.
And getting off the line of scrimmage. There are times they are not respecting their ability to get off the line. I saw at the end of that Illinois game, those guys were right in their grills skiing. Yeah. And you've got to be able to get off the line of scrimmage. That's something that's taught. Even Ronnie Bell, you know, there was a play that he had the late pass interference called. The guy grabbed his arm, so I thought it was a decent call. I didn't like the hold on, the holding call on Zinter, by the way. We'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like that one either. Yeah.
No. But you're still not getting that separation. And then when you do, and you're Roman Wilson, and you've got that ball, and it hits you in the hands, man, catch the ball. And
or
I understand.
Adriel Anthony down there, you know, the ball comes through and goes right between his hands, hits him in the helmet. Hey.
That cannot happen. You are talking about it, you know, not getting your opportunities, that's when you have to make the most of your opportunities. Go back to Derek's previous question or comment, if you don't mind. Hutch, he had mentioned that. Sorry about your dad.
Yeah, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I didn't know, obviously. So now, thanks for making me feel guilty. Now I owe you two dinners.
Well, Derek was a kid. That's what he saw. What he saw
exactly.
Alive. So yeah.
Make
you feel old, Derek.
Yeah, even older. Good Lord. Yeah. If it makes you feel better, I saw you play live when I was a kid. Yeah, and also Ballas, I think you owe me. Yes, I do. I can't tell you the number, guys. I owe dinner too. I owe. Yeah, there's one Scott in Grand Rapids. I owe Taco Boy. I can't wait to do that. And I haven't forgotten. That was a Tiger Woods bet. I bet him that year that he would not win another tournament that year, and then he goes out and wins the Masters, I think it was. And good on him. So that was years ago too. So that shows you how good I am at following up on bets, Derek. You might be waiting a while. So and then no, go back one more time to the other question from Derek, if you don't mind. There it is. What's your favorite Ohio State memory? Yeah. Mine was being, and I was going to ask you this anyway, Skeen. We were in the middle of a pack of Suckeyes, and it was glorious. That was a great memory. Of course, Chris Perry ran all over them. There are a ton of them from this game. Now, wait a minute. Let me get mine first. All right, big fella. Because you had five times you never lost a game against them. And so, I'm going to go with, you know, it's easy to say 1997. We're sitting at the top of the press box, the old press box. We got out of the asbestos, and I'm sitting up top with Doug Karsh, now the voice of Michigan football, who just called, and Dennis Fithian, a good friend of ours. When Charles Woodson returned that punt for a touchdown, I have never heard it louder in there as he's running down the sidelines. That was unbelievable. Love that. And of course, the Desmond Howard play that, you know, that was a blowout game, but that game at the end of Ohio State was as loud as I've ever heard it. And that was still grass at that time. So the smells on the field of grass, guys, when you're in Columbus, I can't explain this to you. When you're down there and you played in it, but I don't think you played on grass at Michigan, but when you're down there and you
at
smell
Michigan,
it,
I did at, yeah, Michigan, yeah. At Ohio State, it was that nasty right. Turf. Yeah.
Right, but the smell is unbelievable. That's what I remember. What's your favorite memory, and what's the best game you played in too? And down there, what was your best? Where you played your best game?
Oh, my last game, unfortunately, it was a tie. Right, we tied Ohio State down there. My
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Played them five times, beat them four times. But I gotta say, my favorite memory down there, Ballas, remind me of the year JD Carlson's kick. When we beat Ohio State. So 1990, we're at Ohio State and standing on the sideline in that day. That is the loudest stadium I've ever been in was that day. And it comes down to the end, and it's obvious we're going to have a chance to kick this thing. And I remember my buddy John Woodlock was watching the game on TV back at home. On TV, you see J.D. Carlson standing next to Billy Schaefer, who was undressed at that time. He's just one of the knuckleheads.
Wait a minute. Undressed, like completely nude?
Yeah, no. Not in uniform.
Because it wouldn't surprise me.
And Bill had his big bushy like bear coat thing on and was kind of talking to J.D. But I'll never forget the words that were spoken from the coaching staff to J.D. before he went out in that field to kick that play. It was... JD, there is no one in the world I would rather have go out and kick this thing than you. No, go win this football game.
And who said that to him?
I think if it was Lloyd, it was Moeller, okay. it was everybody's huddled around, right? You got your special teams and the head coach comes over and Coach Mo is everybody's just giving him that confidence and he went out there and just nailed it. But the favorite part, Ballas, and you and I have talked about this in these podcasts was after that game, the walk back to your locker room and seeing the Ohio State fans and of course, you know, again, let me preface that though. After that game, it's such a hard fought game. At that time, it was respect. We had just won a dogfight against an incredibly talented football team. And the guys are meeting in midfield and saying good game. The losers are upset. The winners are happy, but it was respectful. And then you go toward the locker room where there's a bunch of fans hanging around that locker room that haven't been so respectful toward Michigan people. And the looks on their faces was true joy. And then the looks on all the faces as you get on the bus with the police escort to leave Columbus and the dejected Buckeye fans, it's gratifying to go down there and win, Ballas. It's time that Michigan does this because yes. It's been so long. I would say that year that we went down there and JD kicked that field goal, and I don't think I played a down in that football game, but I was there. The emotions and watching that thing up close, certainly it was a learning lesson for me, but just being around it was really, really cool.
Yeah, and I think it sent Ohio State to the Liberty Bowl in Memphis for a game in like 42-degree weather. And Michigan, of course, went where that year?
Rose Bowl. What else? Where else were we going, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was. It was 1990, and it was that four-way tie.
So, was it? Was that the 1990? Yeah. Sure. Well, we went to the Alligator Bowl then.
Yeah, the Gator Bowl. So, and went down there.
Call it the Alligator Bowl, right?
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Jacksonville.
Yep. Yeah. So, and speaking of big, bushy bear coats, don't forget about Manscaped. 20 go blue at manscaped.com when you're talking about, there you have it. So, even for mustaches, they got stuff for mustaches too. So, and then you know what? There are so many, right, of these Ohio State games. But last year, to me, I got to be honest, last year was up there with any of them. Literally one of the best days of my life, not just because of what happened there, but afterwards and who you spend it with and what you remember about it. Yeah. Was the entire day was really with the snow. I remember walking out of the stadium, guys, I'm getting teary here, and we stay late, obviously, as we're writing up in the press box, and I'm walking out and then the snow really comes down and I'm walking to my car and you can't hear the traffic. You can see the cars, but because of the snow on the ground, you can't hear them. And you see the lights and you see the lights in the stadium as you're walking away and the snow's really coming down and you're thinking that just happened. And now I get to go and spend it with people that you love and get to hang out and celebrate it after 5-6 hours of writing. That goes down. That is, I think, my 1969 for you old guys, where it changed the rivalry and you hope that it changes, you know, the rivalry going forward again. That was our 1969 for a lot of us. It was fantastic. And credit to those guys, including Cade McNamara, for changing the culture, Hassan Haskins. Now it's time to get that monkey off your back down in Columbus. Just hope they're healthy enough to do it. So, Skeen, let's talk a couple more things. I wanted to first bring up, you talked about, hey, you know, Lloyd Carr saying, JD, there's nobody I'd rather have kicking this field goal than you. Jake Moody is legendary.
Cash money, that guy.
Unbelievable. Now, this guy is one of the most unassuming guys that we've ever spoken with, and he really can't understand why you want to talk to him. And I remember talking to him after we met his parents last year at Denny's Beer Barrel Pub in Penn State, and just some of the nicest people ever. And it's like, hey, I know you. I'm a friend of yours on Facebook or whatever. And you get to talk to the family and you get to know these people as human beings, right? And telling them how, just what you think of their kid as a person, you know, and we're allowed to do that, right? Because there's some humanity here and a personal level to it. And they were so appreciative. And then to see their kids, so you root for these guys, Money yeah. Moody, to see these guys go out there and to see what he did, that is really one of the best performances. I don't give a crap if it's a kicker, as John Jansen says. He actually had to give him credit on Inside Michigan Football today. That guy is absolute money. And the 46-yarder is the one I asked him about in the post-game, Skeen. When you're kicking into that wind, and it was – bitter and biting and 30 miles an hour. What an unbelievable performance. And to have the balls like Jim Harbaugh did to go and kick that 41-yarder when everybody's like, man, what are you doing? You need to go for it here. You know what? Trusted his defense and Jake Moody comes through.
Well, Moody's been like that for 2+ years now. The guy seems like he's been doing it forever, but time and time again, think of the Michigan State game, how important he was in that game when we were having trouble punching in the red zone down there. And certainly in this game here, I mean, that guy, when he comes on the field, you're just like, oh, this is going to be good. That kick should have been from 56. And it's like, yep. I think he's going to make it. He just makes everything.
Yeah.
And you know, I tell you, as a guy blocking for kickers and quarterbacks, you talk about Cade McNamara last year in last year's game. When you're in that huddle and you're on the sideline, and you know you're about to go out on an incredibly important down, fourth down, third down, or a game-winning field goal try, and you look in the eyeballs of your teammate, the one thing you want to see is, cool, cat, I got this. I got your back. Let's go knock this thing out and get out of here.
Yeah.
And this guy's got that expression on his face all the time.
Yeah.
He's never rattled. And that's part of being a great kicker. It's part of being a great quarterback or anywhere else on the field, is having that calm look of, I got this. No problem.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. I never had that when I played. So, and I don't have it on the golf course, as you've probably.
Well, I know you don't have it on the golf course.
So, unfortunately, that was indicative of my entire playing career in any sport when the game was on the line. But I will say this, Morton Anderson, who went to Michigan State, was one of the best kickers in the NFL of all time. He said, why would I be nervous when I go out? If you prepare and you know how good you are, what do I have to be nervous about? I know I'm going to make it. Jake Moody went out there. He said in that post-game press conference, I knew I was going to make it, and he wasn't being. There was no bragging about it. He just said, I had it. And when I hit it, he said, I knew it was good. And then running into that locker room, Skeen, and I wish that I would have told Hutch here to pull it up. They've got video of him running in there and they're all chanting his name, Moody, Moody. And it reminded me of that scene in Rudy at the end of Rudy, the great movie about Notre Dame when they're chanting Rudy. So I'm sure that
No, it's not a great movie about Notre Dame, Ballas. It's not. That's stupid movies. Like, oh, we're the first program to ever have a walk-on. Oh, actually, you know, you're not. You know, Michigan's been around playing football longer than you guys, so they can make a movie about it. And then Joe Montana comes out and basically says half the movie was full of crap. It's a big made-up Hollywood story. And, so why'd you got to bring that up? Why you got to piss me off bringing up?
Oh, just because it sounded the same. Rudy, you know?
No.
If you take it for what it is and it's fiction, pure fiction, you know, and forget that this guy is a shyster, you know, then it's pretty darn good. So that's just my opinion. Not the opinion of everybody, the express opinion of everybody on this program, but they were chanting his name, and hopefully Hutch can find it. It was on and they're you know, he's running into the locker room, and his teammates are waiting for him, and they're chanting his name, and here it is right there. This is amazing. That's them chanting Moody, Moody, and somebody had mentioned, man, we are gonna miss Moody, right there. This guy in the back, there he is, right there. Chris Jenkins coming in after him right here. Number 19, Tommy Doman is your guy, fellas. I actually asked Jake Moody about him. He redshirted this year, redshirted last year. He isn't playing this year and waited his turn. He said he had no problem waiting his turn and learning behind Jake Moody. Tommy Doman is going to be the guy that handles punts and kicks next year for this Michigan team. I think he's going to be a great one at it. You know what? There are guys, Moody, I don't have any doubt that there's no question about that for Austin Swan. So Jake Moody's going to have a great career in the NFL too. And by the way, to John Jansen and all these other guys who call him just a kicker. Well, first of all, Chris Stapleton, we know just a punter, especially when you have a mullet. But how about that hit that Moody laid on somebody? And he had another tackle, I think, in the last game too. So kickers, yes. Punters, no, Stapes. Sorry. And Rudy might have been offsides. That's great. Somebody had a shirt that said Rudy was offsides. So fantastic on that last play. So
I still love carrying scenes like that, Ballas. That scene in that locker room is just those moments that you remember forever. It's just it's important. I love seeing that. Out of those guys.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Boy, I can't believe we're 48 minutes into this thing.
Ken, how do you prepare for the noise and the environment? So I'm assuming they're going to get the old speakers out there and they're going to create the noise in practice. The other thing you can do in practice is there's no audibles. There's no voice or anything. You call a play in the huddle and you go to the line, and when the ball moves, you execute. You just don't say anything out there. Everything is but hand or a touch. And so there's a couple different ways to do it. I would guess that at some point in the week this week that they'll go to the indoor building. Hopefully not too much because you got to play outside, so you got to practice out there. You turn that audio system up super loud so you can't hear. It's going to be extremely noisy in Columbus.
Yeah, and you hope for some snow flurries. It looks like there's a potential for rain and snow, low 40s. I couldn't care less, you know what, but it is amazing how many, somebody, one of the weather channels said when the 10-day forecast was within range, the hits and the spikes that they got from people in Ohio and Columbus was unbelievable because they're terrified. Oh my God, you know what, the snow flurries, you know, so they've gotten a little soft down there. I'm just saying, skiing, they're a little soft down there. So
I don't know.
One of the radio guys said they should play every game in a dome so we don't have to worry about the weather.
No, that's soft.
Freaking ridiculous. Yeah, that's so ridiculous. Man up.
No domes at Ohio Stadium. No domes at Michigan Stadium. Come on, let's go.
Right. We're going to come and we're going to take your soul, as you said, and then we're going to take your hotel rooms in Indianapolis when you give them up after you booked them a year ago, like we did last year. And we're going to take over that town. Can't wait. So I don't know if they will I'll tell you this, Skeen, if they had gone in there completely healthy, I give Michigan a great chance to win this football game. I still think they can. Given the edge to Ohio State here, I think it'll be, I think the spread's 7. I think Ohio State's probably going to win by about 10 points. I think the revenge factor, you can say whatever you want. These guys have been pointing to this thing all year. And to me, you know what? This is the biggest game in Ryan Day's career. You can't lose 2 in a row to Michigan.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Down there, they tar feather you and fire you and run you out of town for that. But I think the biggest factor, Ballas, is the health factor for Michigan. And J.J. McCarthy is going to be forced, I think, however they do it, whether Ohio State's defense does what Illinois did or a combination of other defenses throughout the year, in addition to what they do best, J.J. is going to have to play his absolute best game. His accuracy on the football, that offensive line is going to have to keep him clean early in the game, and the wide receivers had better play their best game. If the passing offense does not perform in this game, it's going to be a tough one to win.
Yeah, it is. So we'll see what happens. 50 minutes and 39 seconds, folks. I want to thank you for joining us again. We will do one more after the holiday. I do miss this game being before Thanksgiving, but give us a like if you guys don't mind. We'd like to get to 500 likes. I don't know what we get, maybe an extra Manscaped tool or something like that if we get to 500, but it is a big deal. So if you could like our podcast, that'd be great. I can buy Skeen an extra Fresca or something like that. But hey, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hutch gets a cake. Absolutely. Fruitcake probably, but I want to say thanks to everybody, and we'll do one more show after this game. It'll be on Sunday night. You're gonna be around, Skeen?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Probably about 5 pounds heavier after Thanksgiving.
No, I hope not. Good grief, no. Alice.
Do you deep fry your turkey? How do you prepare your turkey?
No, the last few years we have not had turkey. Last few years we've had brisket. Done a brisket on the smoker at Thanksgiving.
That's amazing.
Pretty awesome. This year we're gonna do. Family's getting together. We're going to have Thanksgiving, traditional Thanksgiving meal on Wednesday, and then we're having prime rib on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, my God. What's the matter? You guys, you're changing. Man, that's a standard right there. That's fantastic. I love it. So I will be over Thursday night after I have my mom's great turkey. So, but I appreciate it. Tell the family I said happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to all you guys, and we will see you guys on Sunday night. Thanks again.
Happy Thanksgiving. Go Blue.